April 20th. Today, as we read from the Old Testament, we'll be looking into the book of Joshua, chapters 21 and 22, where we'll see that after the land was apportioned, the writer looked back and made one summary statement, and that is, God keeps his promises. God kept his promise and gave the land to Israel. He had promised it first to Abraham and then to his descendants. On the basis of that promise, Joshua entered Canaan, defeated the enemy, and claimed the land for Israel. God kept his promise and gave them rest from war, enabling them to conquer all their enemies and enjoy their inheritance. We have spiritual rest today through Christ, and will one day enter into eternal rest. God kept his promise and scattered the Levites throughout Israel. He gave them 48 towns, including the cities of refuge. It should have been a blessing to Israel to have these servants of God living in many different places and sharing the truth of the word with the people. Not one word of his promises has failed, not until this day even. And as we move on into chapter 22 of Joshua, we'll see that not only had the Lord kept his promises to Israel, but Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh had kept their promise as well. It was time for them to cross the Jordan and join their families. Well, Joshua commended them for their faithful service, something that all of us should do for those who have ministered well. He also commanded them to obey the Lord and serve him sincerely. And finally, he cautioned them not to become selfish, but to share the spoils with their brethren. Perhaps Achan came to mind as Joshua spoke to them. The land was at rest, but the eastern tribes were restless because the Jordan River separated them from their brethren. Would their children grow up and think they were not truly Israelites? They should have considered that when they chose the boundary, perhaps. Well, the building of the altar, as we'll see in our reading of Joshua 22, was at first misunderstood as a declaration of war. But then it became a witness of peace and unity. Before you declare war on the brethren, stop to find out what's really going on. Maybe you agree after all. Well, with that, let's begin today's reading in the Old Testament. April 20th, Joshua chapter 21 verse 1 through chapter 22 verse 20. Then the leaders of the tribe of Levi came to consult with Eleazar the priest, Joshua son of Nun, and the leaders of the other tribes of Israel. They spoke to them at Shiloh in the land of Canaan, saying, "The Lord instructed Moses to give us towns to live in and pasture lands for our cattle. So by the command of the Lord, the Levites were given as their inheritance the following towns with their pasture lands. The descendants of Aaron, who were members of the Kohathite clan within the tribe of Levi, were given 13 towns that were originally assigned to the tribes of Judah, Simeon, and Benjamin. The other families of the Kohathite clan were allotted 10 towns from the territories of Ephraim, Dan, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. The clan of Gershon received 13 towns from the tribes of Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, and the half-tribe of Manasseh in Bashan. The clan of Merari received 12 cities from the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and Zebulun. So the Israelites obeyed the Lord's command to Moses and assigned these towns and pasture lands to the Levites by casting sacred lots. The Israelites gave the following towns from the tribes of Judah and Simeon to the descendants of Aaron, who were members of the Kohathite clan within the tribe of Levi, since the sacred lot fell to them first. Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the hill country of Judah, along with its surrounding pasture lands. Arba was an ancestor of Anak, but the fields beyond the city and the surrounding villages were given to Caleb, son of Jephunneh. The following towns, with their pasture lands, were given to the descendants of Aaron the priest: Hebron, a city of refuge for those who accidentally killed someone; Libna, Jatir, Eshtemoah, Holon, Deber, Ain, Jutta, and Beth Shemesh, 9 towns from these 2 tribes. From the tribe of Benjamin, the priests were given the following towns with their surrounding pasture lands: Gibeon, Geba, Anathoth, and Almon, 4 towns. So 13 towns were given to the priests, the descendants of Aaron. The rest of the Kohathite clan from the tribe of Levi was allotted these towns and pasture lands from the tribe of Ephraim: Shechem, a city of refuge for those who accidentally kill someone; Gezer; Kibzaim; and Beth Horon, four towns. The following towns and pasture lands were allotted to the priests from the tribe of Dan: Eltekeh, Gibbethon, Aijalon, and Gath Rimon, four towns. The half-tribe of Manasseh allotted the following towns with their pasture lands to the priests: Tahanak and Gath Rimon, two towns. So 10 towns with their pasture lands were given to the rest of the Kohathite clan. The descendants of Gershon, another clan within the tribe of Levi, received two towns with their pasture lands from the half-tribe of Manasseh: Golan in Bashan, a city of refuge, and Be-Eshterah. From the tribe of Issachar, they received Kishion, Dabaroth, Jarmuth, and En-Ganim, four towns with their pasture lands. From the tribe of Asher, they received Mishael, Abdon, Helkath, and Rehob, four towns and their pasture lands. From the tribe of Naphtali, they received Kadesh in Galilee, a city of refuge, Hamoth Dor, and Kartan, three towns with their pasture lands. So 13 towns and their pasture lands were allotted to the clan of Gershon. The rest of the Levites, the Merari clan, were given the following towns from the tribe of Zebulun: Jokneam, Karta, Dimna, and Nahalal, four towns with their pasture lands. From the tribe of Reuben, they received Bezer, Jahaz, Kedemoth, and Mephahoth, four towns with their pasture lands. From the tribe of Gad, they received Ramoth in Gilead, a city of refuge, Mahanaim, Heshbon, and Jazer, four towns with their pasture lands. So 12 towns were allotted to the clan of Merari. The total number of towns and pasture lands within Israelite territory given to the Levites came to 48. Every one of these towns had pasture lands surrounding it. So the Lord gave to Israel all the land he had sworn to give their ancestors, and they conquered it and settled there. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had solemnly promised their ancestors. None of their enemies could stand against them, for the Lord helped them conquer all their enemies. All of the good promises that the Lord had given Israel came true. Then Joshua called together the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. He told them, "You have done as Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and you have obeyed every order I have given you. You have not deserted the other tribes, even though the campaign has lasted for such a long time. You have been careful to obey the commands of the Lord your God up to the present day. And now the Lord your God has given the other tribes rest as he promised them. So go home now to the land Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the east side of the Jordan River. But be very careful to obey all the commands and the law that Moses gave to you. Love the Lord your God, walk in all his ways, obey his commands, be faithful to him, and serve him with all your heart and all your soul." So Joshua blessed them and sent them home. Now Moses had given the land of Bashan to the half-tribe of Manasseh, east of the Jordan. The other half of the tribe was given land west of the Jordan. As Joshua sent them away, he blessed them and said, "Share with your relatives back home the great wealth you have taken from your enemies. Share with them your large herds of cattle, your silver and gold, your bronze and iron, and your clothing." So the men of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh left the rest of Israel at Shiloh in the land of Canaan. They started the journey back to their own land of Gilead, the territory that belonged to them according to the Lord's command through Moses. But while they were still in Canaan, before they crossed the Jordan River, Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh built a very large altar near the Jordan River at a place called Gililoth. When the rest of Israel heard they had built the altar at Gililoth west of the Jordan River in the land of Canaan, the whole assembly gathered at Shiloh and prepared to go to war against their brother tribes. First, however, they sent a delegation led by Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest. They crossed the river to talk with the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. In this delegation were 10 high officials of Israel, one from each of the 10 tribes, and each leader within the family divisions of Israel. When they arrived in the land of Gilead, they said to the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, "The whole community of the Lord demands to know why you are betraying the God of Israel. How could you turn away from the Lord and build an altar in rebellion against him? Was our sin at Peor not enough? We are not yet fully cleansed of it, even after the plague that struck the entire assembly of the Lord, and yet today you are turning away from following the Lord. If you rebel against the Lord today, he will be angry with all of us tomorrow. If you need the altar because your land is defiled, then join us on our side of the river, where the Lord lives among us in his tabernacle, and we will share our land with you. But do not rebel against the Lord, or draw us into your rebellion by building another altar for yourselves. There is only one true altar of the Lord our God. Didn't God punish all the people of Israel when Achan, a member of the clan of Zerah, sinned by stealing the things set apart for the Lord? He was not the only one who died because of that sin." April 20th. And now we turn our attention to the New Testament, where we'll be reading today in the book of Luke, chapter 20, verses 1 through 26. And here's what's going on there just before we actually read the text. In spite of their evasive and hypocritical reply, the leaders could not escape the past. You see, they had rejected the ministry of John the Baptist, and that led to their refusal to trust Jesus Christ. You may forget your decisions, but they will not forget you. You may even try to bury them, but they will be resurrected to accuse you. Sir Winston Churchill said, "Truth is incontrovertible. Panic may resent it, ignorance may deride it, malice may distort it, but there it is, the truth. It is incontrovertible." Well, they could not escape future judgment, these Pharisees, these teachers of the law. They would reject the Son and the stone, and that would bring about their ruin. Christ either saves you or judges you, and there is no middle ground. It does not exist. The leaders even failed to escape present responsibility. See, in asking Jesus trick questions in an effort to try to trap him, they hoped he would say something they could accuse. But his answers only exposed their folly and increased their guilt. They were fighting a losing battle and would not surrender. Very foolish on their part. And with that, we begin today's reading from the New Testament. April 20th, Luke, chapter 20, verses 1 through 26. One day, as Jesus was teaching and preaching the good news in the temple, the leading priests and teachers of religious law and other leaders came up to him. They demanded, "By whose authority did you drive out the merchants from the temple? Who gave you such authority?" "Let me ask you a question first," he replied. "Did John's baptism come from heaven, or was it merely human?" They talked it over among themselves. "If we say it was from heaven, he will ask why we didn't believe him. But if we say it was merely human, the people will stone us because they are convinced he was a prophet." Finally, they replied, "We don't know." And Jesus responded, "Then I won't answer your question either." Now Jesus turned to the people again and told them this story. A man planted a vineyard, leased it out to tenant farmers, and moved to another country to live for several years. At grape-picking time, he sent one of his servants to collect his share of the crop. But the farmers attacked the servant, beat him up, and sent him back empty-handed. So the owner sent another servant. But the same thing happened. He was beaten up and treated shamefully, and he went away empty-handed. A third man was sent, and the same thing happened. He too was wounded and chased away. "What will I do?" the owner asked himself. "I know. I'll send my cherished son. Surely they will respect him." But when the farmers saw the son, they said to each other, "Here comes the heir to this estate. Let's kill him and get the estate for ourselves." So they dragged him out of the vineyard and murdered him. What do you suppose the owner of the vineyard will do to those farmers? Jesus asked. I'll tell you. he will come and kill them all and lease the vineyard to others. But God forbid that such a thing should ever happen, his listeners protested. Jesus looked at them and said, Then what do the scriptures mean? The stone rejected by the builders has now become the cornerstone. All who stumble over that stone will be broken to pieces, and it will crush anyone on whom it falls. When the teachers of religious law and the leading priests heard this story, they wanted to arrest Jesus immediately because they realized he was pointing at them, that they were the farmers in the story, but they were afraid there would be a riot if they arrested him. Watching for their opportunity, the leaders sent secret agents pretending to be honest men. They tried to get Jesus to say something that could be reported to the Roman governor so he would arrest Jesus. They said, Teacher, we know that you speak and teach what is right and are not influenced by what others think. You sincerely teach the ways of God. Now tell us, is it right to pay taxes to the Roman government or not? He saw through their trickery and said, Show me a Roman coin. Whose picture and title are stamped on it? Caesar's, they replied. Well then, he said, give to Caesar what belongs to him, but everything that belongs to God must be given to God. So they failed to trap him in the presence of the people. Instead, they were amazed by his answer, and they were silenced. Today we're reading Psalm 89, where we'll discover that God made a covenant with David that he would always have a descendant on his throne, and that the Davidic line would rule forever. But Ethan, the Ezrahite, had a problem. One of those Davidic kings had been defeated in war and had lost his throne. Now it seemed to Ethan that God had broken his covenant and that God was not faithful to his people. Faithfulness is the key word in this psalm, as we shall see. God's faithfulness is seen from generation to generation among his people and among the nations. We can also see God's faithfulness and toward David and his family. Ethan knew all of this because he knew the scriptures. But recent events seem to deny the truthfulness of the covenant and the faithfulness of the Lord. Ethan's problem was caused by spiritual short-sightedness. Sometimes we can't see beyond our own noses, and we begin to doubt God. The ultimate fulfillment of the Davidic covenant is, of course, in Jesus Christ, the Son of David, and he will reign forever and ever. God's faithfulness will never, can never, does not ever fail. Psalm 89, verses 1 through 13. A psalm of Ethan, the Ezrahite. I will sing of the tender mercies of the Lord forever. Young and old will hear of your faithfulness. Your unfailing love will last forever. Your faithfulness is as enduring as the heavens. The Lord said, I have made a solemn agreement with David, my chosen servant. I have sworn this oath to him. I will establish your descendants as kings forever. They will sit in your throne from now until eternity. All heaven will praise your miracles, Lord. Myriads of angels will praise you for your faithfulness. For who in all of heaven can compare with the Lord? What mightiest angel is anything like the Lord? The highest angelic powers stand in awe of God. He is far more awesome than those who surround his throne. O Lord God Almighty, where is there anyone as mighty as you, Lord? Faithfulness is your very character. You are the one who rules the oceans. When their waves rise in fearful storms, you subdue them. You are the one who crushed the great sea monster. You scattered your enemies with your mighty arm. The heavens are yours, and the earth is yours. Everything in the world is yours. You created it all. You created north and south. Mount Tabor and Mount Hermon praise your name. Powerful is your arm. Strong is your hand. Your right hand is lifted high in glorious strength. Proverbs chapter 13, verses 15 and 16. A person with good sense is respected. A treacherous person walks a rocky road. Wise people think before they act. Fools don't, and even brag about it.